This has been a joint effort that John and I have put a lot of time into, and because he was talking about it, he tapped me to do this, so I'm glad to do that today. My perspective will be just a little bit different than John's, but it'll be subtle, and we'll see that as we go along. One of the questions is, why new end recommendations? And I put it in quote marks there. We're going to try to talk about these as guidelines. That's a subtle difference, but it's a real one. The idea that somebody can stand there and pronounce a recommendation for you that's always going to work is probably one that has to go away. In fact, the recommendation is only our best estimate based on the data that we've got, and that's why we call it guidelines. It recognizes how much variability there is field by field, year by year, in the end response, and it deals with that, or at least that's our attempt to do that. The proven yield guideline has really been misinterpreted. It took on sort of a weight that it was never, I think, designed to have. The 1.2 is the most you should do has become a that's what you need rule. And that's the way people have taken to interpreting it. And it's the comfort of the single number, we call it. Just give me a number and that's what I'll use. Recent corn yields of 200 bushel plus, and they were extremely common in Illinois this year, has really raised some doubts about the proven yield method and the very high nitrogen rates that it would suggest. We literally have farmers in Illinois that will expect 220 bushels next year, and they might expect even more than that because they got that this year. We had yields, field yields of 250 and up this year, and that calls for some pretty scary nitrogen rates. And I think that there's a lot of thinking that hybrids are responding better with less nitrogen, and that nitrogen rates of 250 simply aren't tenable anymore. And our recent data suggests new guidelines, as we'll see. This is how we've made these yield goal-based end recommendations in the past, and Bob Haft and I have talked a lot about this, and we've tried to point out to people that this was never meant to be, you know, a determination of the need for the crop, and then let's put on fertilizer to give it that. It was based on empirical data, just like you see here. These are recent data over 24 Illinois sites in northern Illinois, and you can see the response corn after corn and corn after soybean. Most of these were based on corn after corn because that's where you needed your nitrogen ever since that became common after World War II. Corn after corn is the nitrogen-needing part of this system. So let's base things on that, and when soybeans came in, then we started to do what you see on the top curve there and say, how does corn after soybean respond? And that difference between the two became the soybean end credit. We don't talk about an end credit anymore, and some people really wonder what happened to it. You see there the 170 at some ratio, as Scott talked about, the 170 pounds of nitrogen at the optimum rate there divided by 157 bushel at that rate is about 1.1 pounds of nitrogen per bushel. That's exactly where the N recommendations came from. You can see it back in some literature in the 60s and 70s. It wasn't based on, although the fact that corn was thought to need about that had some influence on this, it really was based on data. It was a sliding scale, never designed to be 1.2, but with cheap nitrogen, 1.2 works pretty well. As nitrogen gets more expensive, that starts to drop, or corn gets cheaper, or both, that starts to drop to 1, and then eventually even to less than 1 in some cases. More recently, it's been up. If you look at that ratio at the optima with today's prices, it would be pretty much about 1.1, but it has been higher. So we talked about the maximum return to nitrogen is sort of the acronym that stuck. It's a database-driven approach. Most of you are familiar with this. If you haven't already visited the website, I'd encourage you to do that. And basically what we're doing here is accumulating, and I think the idea for this came from the fact that we had accumulated a lot of N response data, and we needed a way to get it into current guidelines on nitrogen rate. Otherwise, it just sits there. So we accumulated N response data from many recent trials, and I'll show you some of the numbers that John put together. We determined the economic response and most profitable N rates directly from trials in the N response database, and we use those to formulate a guideline. Essentially, this is an averaging procedure to allow us to use data from pretty much any source data that we trust to make it part of these guidelines. And John spelled this out yesterday. Each of these is replicated trials, 5 to 7 end rates, non-irrigated. For the most part, we didn't use irrigated ones in the database simply because we didn't have very many. They were either from experiment stations or producer fields. And typically, they're corn following soybean or corn following corn. We know that corn following alfalfa and so on is an important thing. We simply didn't have enough data to put into a database that would give us confidence. And then grain yield was measured, and an end response curve was fit for each trial. And I appreciate what Scott talked about, this business about fitting response curves to data seems sort of esoteric and arbitrary until you're faced with doing it for several hundred trials, and then the model that you choose can really make a difference. And this shows you sort of pictorially where the data came from. You can see that empty space there that's Indiana. Jim Combrato's here. I think they're fixing that now. And more data are being generated in all of these states as we speak. Currently, the database on the calculator has 829 trials, and that's growing by some extent each year from different states. This is what we did then. I'm just showing you this as an example. These are actual data from a trial at Monmouth this last year. They had pretty good yields at Monmouth, Illinois this last year. This was fairly typical, even in farmers' fields. And you can see how those responded. I tend to, by default, use the quadratic plus plateau unless it's very clearly obvious that that doesn't work. One of the subtle differences we've seen when we fit a quadratic only is that it forces the outside, the high rate, it forces the yield down, whether or not the data say should go down or not. So if you have data like this where the top two or three rates gave essentially the same yields, the quadratic plus plateau is a very good way to fit the data, we think. And this is simply pictorially what Scott was showing in terms of economic return. The top line is the gross return to nitrogen converted in this case to dollars per acre. These aren't the data I just showed you. Those numbers would be very much higher. It's from another trial. So that's the top curve is the gross return to nitrogen. The bottom curve is the cost curve. Basically, the slope is the cost per pound of nitrogen. And the subtracted line in the middle there is the net return to nitrogen. And the maximum point in that curve is where the return to nitrogen is at its maximum. So while we call it the MRTN, it's really a nitrogen rate that gives the best or the highest return to nitrogen in that particular trial. Well, to say there's variability among locations and years is sort of an understatement. I like to show this to tell people if they think that nitrogen rate responses aren't variable, this should convince people otherwise. So I tell people, take your pick. Which response curve do you like for your field next year? If you knew what it was going to be, we wouldn't be standing here talking about this. But this shows you what the dilemma is. And that is, and these are actually 7 sites and 6 years of data. So within each of these is year-to-year variation, and there's variation among years. The model that we're talking about, the calculator, it can accommodate no response, as you see on the ones at the bottom there. It can accommodate very large responses, as you see some still rising at the highest end rate, and everything in between. We simply fit a model to each data set. This is the relationship between optimum yield and optimum end rate in corn following corn. You can imagine some relationship there, but it's not very strong. And that's one reason that we simply can't use those yield goal-based recommendations. They're not very well supported by the data. It's even more that way in corn following soybean. This is the family of curves that correspond to those we just saw, these are in the same field, in the same trial, as those where corn followed corn. And you can see, other than a much larger yield at no nitrogen and much flatter response here, the variability is pretty similar between the two sets of data. This is the correlation, or lack thereof, then, between optimum yield and the end rate it takes to get there when corn follows soybean. So what do we do about such variability? We treat these responses as a population. It suggests that the responses may be independent of most factors that we otherwise can control or describe. And that's exactly what we've found. I'm not going to show a lot of that today. John did a lot of work combing through the data set, sorting it by various factors like tillage and soil type, and we really don't come out with things that are different enough to make them different in the calculator. I hope at some point that we can do that, but we're certainly not able to yet, at least not with confidence. We have to be cautious. If you could throw in four trials here where you did no-till, for example, and they gave a little bit different response curve, is it really different? You saw the variability there, and statistically, we can't even dream that things like that would be different. So this does not assume, nor does it rule out, that we can identify site-specific responses or recommendations. It's just that we don't have the data to do that across millions of acres of corn ground in the north central part of the U.S. This requires a lot of data in order to proceed. And that's because, depending on the data set, you know, we can't take six trials and make this thing work. It's just too variable from site to site. Let me give you an example. This is corn following corn at Urbana, 7 years of data here from 99 to 05. These are in the same field. The nitrogen rates stay in the same plot. And this shows you the variability from year to year as if this were a site in a field. And we're going to try to do some simulations with that. But when you apply that return curve concept that I was just talking about, this is what it looks like for the different years in this study. So the diamond is the maximum return point to nitrogen, and you can see there it ranges from about half the maximum rate in 1 year to the maximum rate in another year. So the variability in this, in the same field in year after year, is illustrated here. And that shows you what we're up against when we go to talk about this. What we have done with this approach then is to average those curves that you just saw, but to do it over hundreds of site years and come out with one response curve then. John did a great job with the spreadsheet. It's an amazing spreadsheet, and it calculates the top part of that curve then. You simply applied a quadratic to the upper part of that curve, five or six points there, and then it finds it maximizes that quadratic. The shape of this response curve is not quadratic necessarily. It looks a little bit like it here, but when you look at it, we notice that it's fairly flat on top, and that's why we decided to use a range of rates rather than a single one. That range of rates is based on the fact that, given the data that we've got, response within that, or return to nitrogen within that range, is expected to be very close to the maximum. In fact, we set it at $1 per acre return to nitrogen. That's convenient because it gives a range of about 40 pounds. You can actually set it to something different if you like. We thought that was pretty good. I don't need to talk too much more about ranges. You saw why we did them. The economic penalty of being off the center point of that is not very great, and they do allow some individual choice based on personal approach to risk and so on. This shows you the effect of the price ratio. Scott talked about the price ratio. John put this slide together. It's the Iowa data, and it shows exactly as you'd expect as nitrogen gets more expensive from the top curve to the bottom curve, the optimum rate, or the rate that maximizes return, gets lower. And this gives you a pretty good sense here. When you're at today's prices of about $3.50 a bushel, going from, well, 18 pound, cents per pound is a price we'll never see again. 35 we hope to see again. And going on up from that, you can see how the rate changes here. The ranges are indicated by the open symbols then on each side of the center point. This is what the calculator looks like. Those of you, many of you have been there, I'm sure. You can see, I'll point out there in the center, it says Regional Corn End Rate Publication. You can see the publication that spells this out in more detail. And this shows you what the results are. I calculated from central Illinois, we have 148 site years of corn following soybean. This suggests a 35-cent nitrogen and 350 corn. That's the ratio of 0.1, that the maximum return occurs at 168 pounds of nitrogen. The range within which this is a dollar of the maximum is 152 to 185. And this says that putting nitrogen on the field at that rate is expected to return $196 to the investment in nitrogen. The percent of maximum yield is 98%. We'll show you that in a minute. It says it takes 205 pounds of anhydrous ammonia to provide that, and that costs $58.80 per acre. This is the response curve that comes up by default on that, and it just shows you the same thing we were just talking about. Put into gross minus cost equals net terms. This is the yield response showing, and this is one of the things in terms of education we've had to deal with. People feel if they cut their end rates, their yields are just going to plummet. And showing this gives people some satisfaction that they're really not looking. They're still having trouble with the concept that they'd put on less nitrogen than the crop might need. But at least this gives them comfort that they're not probably going to lose the farm over that decision. And this is one that's kind of a scary one. You can call this one up, and it will give you this distribution of EONR values over all of the experiments. In this case, the ones I mentioned, central Illinois corn after soybean. This is the percent distribution of the EONR by range. I'm afraid to show farmers this. They say, you mean that there's a really good chance I could need more than 200 and you're telling me to put on 168, which is the fourth bar from the right. And the concept that the farmer would actually choose to put on a rate that doesn't maximize his yield is one that takes a little bit of effort to get through. And it's true, and on the other hand, if your field that year needed 220 pounds of nitrogen for some reason, and sometimes it will, you're not going to see the 168 pounds as a deficit. You know, it's probably going to return less than it might have, but it's not going to look like, you know, yellow corn in most cases. These yield responses are fairly flat over the optimum end rate and in its range, and we have to keep that in mind. So what happens next? Well, we're just adding data. The effect on the guidelines depends on how much new data differs from old data. We did have a case of this last year. We had in 2006 in northern Illinois, corn following corn was extremely non-responsive due to carryover nitrogen. And so we actually saw 23 sites versus, and we only added 8 sites, and the optimum nitrogen rate in the calculator went down, as you can see there, by about 24 pounds. And that's why we keep doing some of this, because we have to get to a point where we're fairly sure that these are accurately measured. And we were troubled previously, honestly, by the fact that, you know, our corn following corn guideline rate in northern Illinois was almost 70 pounds more than the corn following soybean one. And that's higher than even our data typically show. These are lingering questions. Will we ever get better at predicting a best end rate before the season for individual fields? And a lot of people look at this as, well, you gave up, you know, in being able to do this, and now you're just lumping everything together. It's true that we are. But given the variability that's out there, I'm not sure we have very much choice. Will we ever get enough end response data? No. Does hybrid make a difference? And if so, will we ever be able to take advantage of such differences? That's an open question at this point. We're not fussy about hybrids. In my experience, it doesn't make a huge difference if you take year-to-year variability into account. Our novel ways to get N into corn plants like foliar feeding useful and worth the trouble, that's not one that we're addressing with this approach. Well, let's skip on to the end. Fine-tuning these decisions, people do have with these ranges that we give some individual choice in this matter. That's why we call them guidelines. And I think that most of our producers are getting comfortable with the idea there's variability and that they can live with that. And when nitrogen gets expensive, a lot of our producers that actually participate in our on-farm trials are very happy in some cases to reduce rates from what they've been using because they find in their own results what happens. So we'll skip through that. The other one graph that the calculator will give you is this one. It graphs optimum N rate against optimum yield, the data that I was showing you early on. And you can see here there's just not very much correlation, although my practiced eye can see a little bit there. And we still think for corn after corn that people that don't have carryover and are looking at very high yields in 07 probably need to be towards the high end of the range in 08 because there's going to be a lot of tie-up, we know that. So the advantages, and I won't belabor these, John talked about them, but it's a dynamic system and it uses economic inputs to make adjustments. And this is the last slide. This is resources, the regional publication there. If you've not looked at it, I'd encourage you to do that. And the website is given here. I think that's in the abstract. And if you just Google N-rate calculator, this is the first one that will come up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Speaker.